Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comic book sales for November 2010 through Diamond to retailers. These are, of course, sales to the stores, so we're not sure how many are sitting on store shelves, how many completely sold out, how many got in the hands of readers, and how many actually got read. But it's a good starting point, and these are the numbers that the publishers are using to determine which titles they continue with, which they don't, because as far as they're concerned, these are the actual sales. So, as always, we're going to take a look at the breakdown of the top 300. As is often the case, as is actually usually the case, Marvel came out on top with a lion's share of the sales for the top 300. They had just a hair under 43%, with 42.99% of the total units for the top 300, and 44.93% of the total dollars for the top 300. Now, in some months in the past, actually, a surprising amount of months in the past, they've actually had over 50%. So this is a little below that, but still very, very strong sales for them. Now, it's also a very good month for DC, which had 39.81% of the units and 37.37% of the dollars.
Now, do you track the gap between Marvel and DC, the percentage gap? Because it seems like Marvel has outsold DC by more than, you know, about 3% in the past.
If you go back in the spreadsheet, two sheets to the comic breakdown history, yes, I do.
Ah, okay.
I don't always keep that up to date. I actually had to extend the formula a couple of lines on this. In this case, we've got a 3.18% gap with Marvel up on top. The narrowest gap I believe we've had was either the 0.75% when DC was ahead back in May 2005. Yeah, I believe that was the closest they've ever come to kind of a dead heat. The largest gap I believe we've seen, and I'm limiting this to the Final Order era, so really from March, 2003 forward. I have data going back beyond that, but that's pre-order sales and is what the stores wanted to get, not what they actually got. That included a lot of things that just never shipped. But the largest gap we've seen between them was in September 2008, with a 25.87% gap between Marvel and DC, with Marvel up on top on that. You know, so it was, I mean, sometimes they're close, sometimes they're not, and really this also depends on the size of the pie, because sometimes, you know, you just have more dollars, more units, etc., than you have in other months. In this particular case, we've got right around, a little under actually, 5.5 million units. In some cases, we have had as high as 7.5. I believe at one point we came close to 8. Let me see if I can find that real quick. The lowest we had was under 5 million with 4,292,620 total units for the top 300 back in January 2005. And I do not see anywhere it topped out over 8 million. So usually the 5.5 to 6 million, you know, really pretty much the average. Actually, about a little under 6.5 million would be the average for the Final Order era. But if you look at it, out of all of these months, and we've got 94 months here where we've got, you know, a winner, 90 of them, you know, 90 times it was Marvel, 4 times it was DC. So typically Marvel is just selling more books than DC. Yeah, I don't know if that means there's just more Marvel fans out there, more Marvel books, which in some cases is usually the case, or exactly what to attribute that to. But between Marvel and DC this time around, you know, we've got 82.81% of the sales accounted for and 82.30% of the dollars. And that's just from those two. If we then include kind of that next tier of publishers, which really rounds out the rest of the premier publishers, all of them did right around 3.25% of the units, and between a little over 2.75% to 3.75% of the dollars, between Dynamite, Image, IDW, and Dark Horse, kind of in that order. And that accounts for another 13% of the units and 13.44% of the dollars. So by the time we move out of the front half of previews, 95.87% of the unit sales. Well, actually, that includes Dynamite, which is technically not a premier publisher, my mistake. And what's interesting is that's the one that had 3.43% of the units, 3.71% of the dollars, and actually beat out Image, IDW, and Dark Horse, which are the other three premier publishers. So really, the premier publishers are a total of 92.44% of the units and 92.03% of the sales.
Yeah, and when you add in Boom also, which is the next one with 1.65%, you're up at 97.5% of total units. So,
well, and I kind of put Boom as, I mean, really the easiest way to tier publishers on the comic sales for the month is by the number of digits in their total units. Marvel and DC are 7-digit figures. Dynamite, Image, IDW, Dark Horse are all 6-figure digits, or 6-figure numbers. Boom at 5, but a high 5 with a total of 90,254 units. And then you've got Bongo, Archie, Avatar, and Zenoscope, which are between, 13 and 26, 27,000 units. So still in the 5 figures, but again, there's a big difference between those 4 and Boom, because even those 4 put together don't total up to Boom. And then you've got everybody who's the under 10,000, and all of those guys together are less than 60,000 units. And you can have a title at Marvel or DC doing above that. So it's kind of interesting just how clearly some of these things, stratify out in terms of very easy-to-define tiers of publishers. And Boom is one of those that clearly is well above kind of the Bongo, the Archie, the lower level known quantities, if you will, in the back half. Not quite up to, playing in the premier publisher league, but really it's close. In some months it's in that league. It's right there with Dynamite, and some of it just depends how big of a month did they have, what kind of big promotions or big, releases did they have. Both Dynamite and Boom are ones that if they made a play for being in the front half of previews, it's like, to me, that would be justifiable. But it's kind of interesting just the different levels these publishers are operating at. Because there's a big difference between, again, the 25,000, the 90,000, the 180,000, or the 2.something million.
Right. Yeah. And what's interesting is Stanley's Traveler launched at 15,450, which, we reviewed that on Weekly Comic Spotlight. We both gave that a 5 out of 5. I thought that was a wonderful comic book. Mm-hmm. And, it premiered down there. And was there reorder activity on Soldier Zero number one? Because Soldier Zero number one, according to this, the previous, because it has issue 2 of Soldier Zero on here at 11, little over 11,000, and it's saying the first issue, Soldier Zero, came out 19.5, almost 19.6. So actually, Soldier Zero number one sold better than Traveler, and I thought Traveler was a far better book. I'm wondering if, and we had talked about, how Traveler would have been a much stronger launch to that whole thing. I'm wondering if Soldier Zero, kind of being out first, although it can't be. I'm thinking that, but all these orders went in before,
Well, you look at the Soldier Zero 2 here that has an order date of September 2010 along with the Traveler, which means that that first issue of Stan Lee's Soldier Zero was ordered a month earlier.
Right.
So there are certain expectations that are set, and I do think that the first book, certainly of a publisher, and I think also an imprint or a de facto imprint, which is what this is, the Stan Lee-averse over at Boom, if you will, really sets the tone for how things are going to sell. And as is often the case, just like the first issue is often the high water mark for the sales of the series, the first issue of a line is kind of setting the bar. And I think that Traveler, I mean, we both agree that was a stronger first issue than Soldier Zero's first issue. Well, and frankly, even Soldier Zero's second issue. That would have been the better book to lead out with. And I think it probably would have had stronger sales as a result. But, you know, we'll never know at this point because that's not what happened. We can theorize all we want.
Yeah, it's just, you know, probably kind of hard to get a hold of, but it was a great book. You know, so.
Well, but look at the difference between that first and second issue of Stanley Soldier Zero. It's at rank 154, and it dropped by 42.94%. It lost 8,413 units. So part of that is, gee, it's a new Stan Lee thing. There's a certain amount of curiosity and interest based just on that from readers that have no real expectation, I would imagine, of continuing going forward. So I think there's certain books where that drop-off between the first and second issue is not a reflection of quality of interest, but of the looky-loo factor, I guess, for lack of a better term, where, I mean, we saw this back with 1 year later at DC, where people were trying out books left, right, and center, and you know that not everyone was going to be able to afford or want to continue with every title. I think we're going to see some of that, both the Stanley Traveler stuff and a few other kind of new lines of books here and there. And really, once you've checked out that first Stanley book over at Boom, do you need to try the first issue of every Stanley book over at Boom? Some people yes, some people no.
Yeah, in this case, they should have, because Traveler was a great book. But
I would have thought the combination of Stanley and Mark Waid would have been enough to sell people. Yeah. What's interesting is that drop of Stanley Soldier Zero puts it really, really right in line with Irredeemable. There's only a difference of about 78 estimated units between those two, right around that 11,100 and either 2 for Irredeemable or 11,180 for the second issue of Stanley Soldier Zero. And, you know, then you've got Incorruptible at the 9,403 units, and then, you know, from there, things start to drop off once you get down into either the Farscape stuff, the Amory Wars, the 28 Days Later, Uncle Scrooge, etc., with a lot of those doing in the 3,000 or 4,000 range. And they've all got fairly loyal followings and stuff like that. It's just a matter of, you know, they're getting crowded out by a lot of the things above that on the list. Because really, the majority of Boom's output is under the rank 200, sometimes by quite a margin.
So Batman had a good month, huh?
Yeah, well, yes and no. I was going to say, starting up at the top of the list, we've got Batman the Return. Obviously, big to-do for Bruce Wayne there coming back. And it did well, obviously, top the list. But it did so below 100,000. 99,545 units, which, you know, isn't bad. But for the return of Bruce Wayne, a big hype, all that kind of stuff, would have been nice for it to crack 100,000. Likewise, it ranked number 2 with the first issue of Batman Incorporated, although arguably you could say that the return was really the first issue of that. But Batman Incorporated number 1 did 95,587 units. So both of those are big, you know, important issues for Batman. Neither cracked 100,000. I mean, nothing cracked 100,000 this time.
Yep. 5 of the top 10 were Batman books. 8 of the top 10, DC.
Yeah. Again, it was a good month for DC, good month for Batman in particular. I mean, Return of Bruce Wayne, number 6, was at rank 4 with 83,004 estimated units. Batman and Robin, 16, at rank 4 with 80,343 estimated units. All of which are good sales, but when you throw that much marketing stuff behind the Return of Batman, and again, none of these crack 100,000, I gotta think missed opportunity. And I think the unfortunate ordering of the Return of Bruce Wayne, the Return, the Road Home, all that kind of stuff, really kind of killed some of the momentum of that story.
I think people say, wow, they put out too many Batman books. It's like, well, people buy them. That's why they put them out. So when you see 5 Batman books in the top 10 and then Batman itself coming in at rank 12, you know, half of the top 12, 6 books, all Batman books. People like Batman. They buy Batman anyway.
Yeah, but we also have some books featuring Batman that are doing much, much worse.
Oh, sure.
you know, Batman Confidential 50. Granted, that's kind of a side off on its own book. I don't even get that regularly. Doing 14,450. We've got, what else in the Batman? The Gotham City Sirens, down at rank 82, 22,107. Gotham Streets or Batman Streets of Gotham, 22,390. Sandwiched between those was the final issue of the Red Hood, Lost Days, number 6, 22,123. So, I mean, arguably, those are three Batman books, potentially too many, depending what you would consider the break-off point of is it worth doing a comic or not. Clearly for DC, those are books worth doing. They can have books, they have books under 10,000, which is where things are starting to get cut. Back when I first started talking about sales, comic sales on podcasts, which, I mean, this marks the end of 5 years. I will have covered 5 years of comic sales on podcasts with this data set. Back when I was starting, sales at these numbers, that would have been cancellation numbers. They would have said, okay, let's kill off Streets of Gotham and Gotham City Sirens. Let's do something else. These days, that is definitely not the case. These are actually maybe not great sales as far as DC is concerned, but apparently they're viable sales. They keep books around at this level. That's been actually one of the most depressing things about talking about comic book sales for the last 5 years is how low the sales have gotten and how low they're, I don't say allowed to get, that's not right, but that they're having to let them get, otherwise they're going to wind up canceling pretty much everything. And I do think part of why some of these sales are so low is, again, there are so many choices for I want to read Batman, what do you get?
Another one that interested me all the way down at number 103, where, that's, I guess, a tie-in, but, you know, it's like this Chaos War stuff that's coming out. I mean, it's not burning up the charts.
Well, I mean, let's talk about the Chaos War stuff, because there's a couple of those in here. We've got Chaos War number 3 itself at rank 61. It did 28,630 units, so that's not lighting up the charts much at all. This is spinning out of the Incredible Hercules, the Prince of Power stuff, which was really a replacement character and title and stuff for the Hulk stuff way back when. And now they're trying to spin a whole, you know, thing out of that with Chaos War. You've got the Dead Avengers number 1 at 20,312 units. Chaos War Thor 1 at 19,738 units. The Chaos War King you just mentioned, 17,578 units. Chaos War Alpha Flight at 17,164 units. I was thinking we had one or two potentially even further below. It comes down to there's too many Chaos War books. They've stratified the sales.
Yeah. I didn't notice one lower than the Chaos King, and then there's the one four lower than it. It's just, you know, when you have, like, kind of the pseudo-events, they just don't seem to do sales like the main big events, and that's another thing. You know, people say, oh, we don't like the big crossovers, but, you know, those big crossovers, they pull in sales. And, you know, until a big crossover happens and it tanks in sales, you know, these little ones just don't seem to be burning up the charts.
No, and these are what I would consider regional events. I mean, they hit a certain region of titles, that's it. They're not a full-blown line. But just between the Chaos War ones we've talked about, the various Shadowland, you know, Blood on the Streets, Daughters of Shadow, Power Man, I'm not seeing any other, maybe I'm not looking high enough for the Shadowland stuff, but I mean, that's 145,752 sales across all of those. So, I mean, that adds up, you know, over time. Do they have too damn many of these? Oh, certainly. Are they going to sell top of the charts? Most certainly not, because these are coming out of a mid-list title and suddenly expanding, you know, in Shadowland's case, Daredevil from essentially one issue a month to, you know, 30-some-odd over the course of 5 months. Likewise with the Chaos War, which was taking one, maybe two Hercules titles or issues a month and putting it up to, you know, I haven't counted how many, but, you know, 30 or 40 over the course of a couple of months. You're not going to get that much out of those readers. They don't have either that kind of budget or interest for some of this. I mean, you've talked a number of times of your interest in certain things only goes so many issues deep a month, you know, and I think right. a lot of people are that way. And that's one of the mistakes I think Dynamite made with the Green Hornet stuff was too much too fast.
So interestingly, you say, now, if you add up those Chaos War books, right, how many units were those?
I was also including the Shadowlands stuff. If you include just the Chaos War, that's 103,422.
Okay, because I was just looking, you know, there's about 5.5 million total sales here. So that 3% that Marvel beat DC by is 165,000 units. So if they were not publishing Chaos War and Shadowland, they would have been tied with DC.
Yeah. I mean, again, part of what's working for Marvel is volume. They're coming out with stuff that some of it's really great. I'm sure there are some people who just love certain things. But by and large, the average sales for Marvel are going, well, for everybody are going down, but have really gone down over time at Marvel because they've kind of flooded the market. And there are many different publishing theories. I'm not going to say one's right or wrong. I think some may be better than others, in my opinion. But coming out with, you know, 100 titles a month or 100 issues a month or whatever versus back when they were doing 60 and their sales on each one were higher, you gotta figure out, you know, what methodology do you want your publishing company to work under? Clearly they're saying, let's just dump as much out there and see what sticks.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a time and a place for that. In this economy, in this state of in this comic book economy, I mean, regardless of the overall economy, this seems like a questionable plan because they're having to pay creators for each one of these. You know, if they had done one Chaos War book that sold the combination of what these couple did, they'd have been better off. But is there any reason to think if they hadn't done these others that the Chaos War book would have sold better? No, not really.
Well, you know, realistically, though, and I don't know how many people fall in the same boat as me, but the reason I skipped the entire Chaos War event was because all of the minis. If there was one Chaos War book, period, I would have bought it.
And you would have done probably the same thing on Shadowland.
That's right. And, you know, I think that a lot of people, maybe, and I don't know, maybe there are other people in that boat. You know, it's like you got five titles here that are aggregate selling 100,000 copies. And if there was one, you know, would maybe 100,000 people buy it? I don't know. It might not work out that way. But even if like only 75,000 people bought the one book, you know, would you kind of break even on not having to pay the creators on the other four books?
Entire books have been written around that essential question. I've got one sitting in my hand right now, Paradox of Choice, which I'm hoping to find the time to read soon, and the basic concept of why more is less. And by giving people too many choices, you either induce, you know, decision paralysis or what have you. And it's a question of, do I want to get one book? Which Batman book do I get? Which Chaos War title do I need to read to understand the story? All of that, if they would just simplify the decision process and not overwhelm the readers with, well, which X-Men book do I want to read? Which, you know, and I'm picking on Marvel here, one, because I've currently got my list filtered to that, but two, because Marvel's, I think, a bit more guilty of this. They've got too many Deadpool books. They've got too many Wolverine books. They've got too many, you know, this, that, and the other type stuff. And back when it's, I read Avengers, and it's Avengers, or maybe West Coast Avengers, but at most two titles. It's not Avengers Children Crusade, Mighty Avengers, Secret Avengers, New Avengers, you know, Avengers Prime, Avengers in the Infinity Gauntlet, I Am an Avenger. I mean, it's over, Avengers Academy, it's overwhelming. And if they were to scale back on that, not necessarily scale back on the number of titles, but to scale back on kind of the perceived overlap of titles.
The repetitiveness of titles.
Yes. I mean, the Shadowland stuff, stories I enjoyed, but because of the way they had marketed this stuff, they scared people off, you know? And that's something that is as much an editorial fault as a marketing fault. And really it comes down to, you know, did that story need to be that big? Should it have been that big? You know, do these regional events really work or not? And on the one hand, you know, some of these sales on these Shadowland ones, like the Shadowland Power Man, 13,584 units. These are not great sales. These are actually close to, why are they bothering sales?
Well, I mean, look at Generation Hope number one. I mean, and I thought when I read that book, I'm not, you know, didn't come back for number two, right? But I thought that that was way too steeped in, you know, the X-Men mythology for me, which, you know, some people might like. But, you know, for a number one book in the X universe that's steeped really deeply in X-Men mythology to launch at just a hair over 37,000, that's not that good, right?
Okay, let's talk for a moment about Marvel number ones. Because if we filter out the two reorders, we have 23 first issues from Marvel this month. And the top one is that Generation Hope, number one, at 37,398 units.
Wow.
Next one up is Astonishing Thor, number one. Astonishing Thor. Astonishing, that's their big line of great creative talent and stuff. 29,202 estimated units. Okay, it was also 3 weeks late. Beyond that, next down, we've got Spider-Girl number one, 23,926 units. Captain America Out of Time, 23,566 units. Osborn, 23,152 units. Iron Man Thor, 21,416 units. The aforementioned Chaos War Dead Avengers, 20,312. Punisher in Blood, 20,028 units. Chaos War Thor, 19,738 units. X-Men to Serve and Protect, 19,273 units. She-Hulks, 18,616. Chaos War King, 17,578 units. Chaos War Alpha Flight, 17,164 units.
Yeah, and it just gets worse from there. I mean, it, you know, you got Thunderstrike, you know, it's just...
The Bullseye Perfect Game I want to talk about for just a second. 15,462 units. I read this. I thought this was actually an interesting concept. Bullseye, the guy who can't miss, he decides to take a year off from being an assassin, decides to pitch baseball. Just for the challenge. Because, I mean, he can't miss, whatever, he should be a really good pitcher. The first issue of this particular issue, technically is one scene of expository dialogue. We basically are watching some guy tell us the story. We get a couple of pictures of other things or whatever, but I was astounded by the storytelling structure on that, and I expect it to potentially tank on the next issue. But yeah, I mean, none of these things did particularly well. But by coming out with all of these things, that's over, you know, 400,000 in sales. Over 407,000, actually. So it makes sense for them to throw out the Ant-Man Wasp, the Warriors 3, the Iron Man Rapture, the Heroic Age Villain, the Women of Marvel, all this stuff. But what they have successfully done is leech the power out of the number one. I mean, Astonishing Thor? Shouldn't that have been bit bigger of a splash than 29,202 units?
And some of these were actually pretty good. I mean, you talk about Punisher in the Blood, but you know, you look at Spider-Girl. We talked about that on the show. That was a decent comic. I liked that comic. And same thing about Ant-Man and Wasp. I thought that was a really, really good comic. And you know, it's selling 14,000. But it's just lost in the forest of spurious number ones.
There's another thing that sets all of these in common, in addition to being a first issue from Marvel. They're all $3.99. That can't help. And this goes back to, you know, essentially somebody needs to find a way to get Marvel to stop that. Trying to shame them into that isn't working. Over half the list was at $3.99 this month. You know, 154 items. And I think we've seen a very vocal and consistent pushback on that of readers and retailers saying that's too much.
They seem to be tailing back on that, you know, in the newer solicits. You know, I've been kind of paying attention to that, and it seems like their current philosophy is number ones. They might have a number one at $3.99, and then they'll throw a little bit of extra material in it, you know, like that...
Well, the Heroes for Hire saga.
Heroes for Hire. But then the ongoing issues of that are going to be $2.99, right? And, you know, the other one is a lot of these minis that are coming out are now coming out. I mean, if they started a mini already, they're not going to drop the price on it midstream. I don't know why they can't do that. And it's just like they like that feeling of...
Well, they probably budgeted it at that kind of a price, yeah, and needed to make certain amounts. So
but... You know, like in the something like Captain America Man at a Time. That's $3.99, right? I mean, similar miniseries, you know, like Silver Surfer and other kinds of ones that are in the February solicits, those are at the $2.99 price point. So I suspect that several of these, you know, like Women of Marvel and Iron Man Rapture and Warriors 3 and Ant-Man and Wasp and, you know, Thunderstrike, any of those that would have been solicited starting February forward would have been at the $2.99 price point. So they're getting a little bit of the message. So I'm a little bit hopeful, you know, that they're steering the ship a little bit.
And that's good, but to a certain extent, damage done. Because for these particular titles, this is probably going to be the high water mark for most of these.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing you're going to do to pull Ant-Man and Wasp out of the range that sits in. And it's too bad.
Well, a three-issue miniseries, you chalk that up as a loss, but Generation Hope, new ongoing X title, and clearly a lower-tier X title.
Now, they might change, I don't know if they did or not on that, change its price.
They have had a few things at Marvel where they were solicited at $3.99 and they wound up coming out at $2.99. The issue of Daredevil this month was one of those. I've had a couple when I'm doing my bookkeeping on my weekly comics that I have to, you know, adjust down based on what was solicited and versus what it cost when it came out. Not many, but enough. It just comes down to the $3.99 price is a barrier to sales. Dropping things to $2.99 is not going to inflate sales. It does not work that way. And they've essentially, you know, I don't say killed the sales, but certainly put a ceiling on the sales for Thunderstrike, Ant-Man and Wasp, Warriors 3, Man Out of Time. The question is, are they going to have done that on Astonishing Thor, Spider-Girl, Generation Hope, these ongoing titles? And, you know, how much kind of bad will has Marvel generated by being so reluctant to let loose of that price? And Quesada can say all he wants, oh, it's not my call, not my call, and that very well may be true, but he should at least be sending the message of, I'm trying to fight that battle for you. And he just seems to, well, not my problem, and just chalk it up at that. And I think that's a really bad move.
Well, if you look at the top of the list, and you know what Marvel's finally, what they're doing is they're dropping the lower selling titles, you know, down to the $2.99 price point. The ones that they're not dropping in the price point are the ones at the top of the list. You know, your Avengers, New Avengers, Secret Avengers, X-Men, you know, kind of books, Wolverine, Thor, Captain America. Those things appear to be hanging out at that $3.99 price point because they can make more money because those are their core characters and core properties, and there are people who will buy those regardless, although less.
Let's talk about the one of those you jumped over, though, which is rank 18, which is Uncanny X-Force number 2. And I'm assuming just because there's so many, you just missed that, whatever. That dropped by over 43% from the first to second issue. We've seen this kind of a harsh drop on a couple of different titles, I believe Wolverine and the new X-Men title. And I've got to think, if they had had the second issues of those at the $2.99, the drop might have been less severe.
The reason I skipped over that one was because I wasn't sure whether they were holding that February onward at the $3.99 price point, because I'm not buying it. I know that these other ones, they are holding at the price.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure off the top of my head if they are adjusting the price on that one or not. I'm going to flip through my Marvel previews real quick, see if I can find out. I just think that they've, at this point, gotten the reputation of not moving those titles, yet staying at $3.99 at 32 pages for Uncanny X-Force.
Okay.
And this is a battle of perception as much as anything else. And this is one that's going against Marvel, whereas other ones in the past have actually worked for Marvel. For the longest time, a number of years back, they were saying, oh, we're not overprinting a damn thing, so order it now or never get it. And essentially using scare tactics to beef up their orders. And it worked. You know, that was back when we were getting, you know, 4 or 5 press releases a week of this sold out, this sold out, this sold out, no more are ever going to be available kind of a thing. And over time, they relaxed that policy. They were doing reorders, reprints, I should say, and stuff like that, but were very quiet about that. because they wanted people to think, well, either I order now or I never get it. Certainly at the retailer level, it even leaked down to the reader level with that impact, and that was what was boosting or keeping up sales. And now there's the perception that, well, DC has lowered everything to $2.99 at the 32 pages, and Marvel has lowered maybe a few things. With the few things they are lowering, they're really not getting as much credit for because they've kept so many at the $3.99.
And the ones they're keeping at $3.99 are the ones that everyone buys. So, I mean, you know, people walk in the shop. I go to the comic shop on Wednesdays when I can. And, you know, when I'm standing and, you know, if I get there too close to the opening time, there's usually a decent sized line of people. And, you know, whatever week it is, I can almost guarantee that, you know, the people in the line who are not like the people with the big stack, if they've got only 3 or 4 issues in their hands, it's going to be Avengers, New Avengers, X-Men, Wolverine, you know, Captain America, you know, those big books. You know, people who buy a few books, those seem to be the books that they're buying, you know, and...
But they should point out that, like, on this month, the ones they had at $2.99, X-Men Legacy, Fantastic Four, Daken Dark Wolverine, Deadpool, X-23, X-Factor, Avengers Academy, New Mutants, Secret Warriors, Namor First Mutant, Deadpool Corps, Deadpool Team-Up. I mean, they've had quite a few, and they've got a few others at the $2.99, but they're not really trumpeting that horn loud enough to be getting that kind of a credit. And yeah, most of the books most of the people are buying are still at the $3.99.
I guess my point is the perception thing is that, you know, your average fan that's buying only a handful of Marvel books are buying the handful that are all $3.99. So even though Marvel has dropped the prices on a bunch of books, a lot of their fans, they're oblivious to that because all the ones they're buying are still $3.99. As far as they're concerned, you know, 90% of Marvel is $3.99 because 90% of what they buy or 100% of what they buy is $3.99. When in actual point of fact, you know, I think as of February, like 50 or 60% of all the stuff that they're publishing has gone down to $2.99. But I don't think it's anywhere near that percentage as far as, you know, total units sold.
Well, I agree with that, but I think that while most people are oblivious to that price drop, there's probably one title in their stack in a lot of cases that did that price drop, and they're just, I don't say assuming it's a $3.99, but you know what I mean? Marvel should be getting a little more credit than what it's, I think, actually getting for lowering the price on a few titles that a few people are getting. Should they, I mean, yeah, most of the titles, again, percentage sales wise, I'm sure the majority, like overwhelming, is still at the $3.99 just because of the top stack books, like you were mentioning. But I think there are a lot more people getting the benefit of some of these price drops at Marvel than realize it, which is unfortunate, but that's a poor job of communication, from Marvel, Quesada in particular, although not exclusively. And they should be pointing out, not, oh, we're doing it on select titles, but actually name some names. Mention Fantastic Fours at $2.99. Mention X-Men Legacies at $2.99. You know, these obviously aren't top-selling books, but they're not bottom-selling books either. So they could be managing the PR on this a lot better. They could also be managing the price on this a lot better. But, you know, they probably have more control on the message they send out from their marketing than apparently they have on the prices for their books, which is odd. I would think that they'd be able to figure out what price to set the books at when they decide to publish them. But apparently that is completely out of editorial control over at Marvel. We had a couple of books that did some interesting bounce-ups. We saw Spider-Man 648 bounce up 38%. That, I believe, was the start of the big-time storyline, correct?
Correct.
It then dropped by about 31%, 32%, pretty much back down to a little below where it had been on the issue prior to that jump with the next issue. So, in other words, 647 was at 55,819. It jumps up with the 648 to 77,033 units and then down to 52,586 units with 649. So a lot of people were interested in that issue. No carryover, whether there will be over time or not, who knows.
And they quite considerately raised the price on that issue to $4.99. Just to add insult to injury on that.
But it was at $4.99 for 647, too.
So no, I was talking about 647. It's like that was the one that really got you.
But it's one of those where, you know, 646 is $2.99, then they go to $4.99, then they go to $3.99 that they seem to be sticking it at. Marvel's done that kind of a hidden price jump a couple of times.
Yeah, I think they reduced the frequency of it to bi-monthly now instead of three times a month.
Yeah.
So there was the 647 was the one that was the $4.99. That was the start of the big time. Then 648, you know, is their new ongoing price is now $3.99, but it's only twice a month. So,
but 648 was the one that had the bump up. I thought 648 was the start of the big time, and 647 was kind of that breather issue.
Yeah, you're right. It was that in between issue. But you know, so now you're getting two issues of Spider-Man a month for $8 retail instead of three issues for $9 retail. So.
Well, it wasn't usually $9 because usually they had one of them at $3.99.
Yeah, usually they were sneaking a $3.99 in, yeah.
But that's the kind of thing where they're burning bridges with readers. We see a big 17% jump on Ultimate Comics Spider-Man as it goes to really Ultimate Comics Spider-Man 150. No doubt that'll be gone on the next issue. Other big jumps we see, one or two, Invincible jump by almost 8.25% with issue 75, 17,029 units. Bigger issue, it was a $5.99 issue, oversized versus the normal one. No doubt it'll go back to normal with the next issue. There's one that I found just humorous. Rank 203, Simpsons Comics 172 was sold, let's see, 7,429 units, which is exactly what the previous issue sold in terms of estimated sales. It is incredibly rare for that to have that kind of perfect leveling out between issues. I would be hard-pressed to name any other time I've actually noticed that in the list. Because, I mean, just the noise factor between the estimates and stuff like that, it's usually going to fluctuate by at least a unit or two, just as retailers adjust their orders and whatnot. One that dropped pretty heavy, which I found not the least bit surprising with the second issue, was down at rank 231. We've got Tron Betrayal. The first issue did 10,934 units. Second issue did 5,742 units. That's a 47.48% drop. I contributed to that drop. I got the first issue, but not the second. The reason? I never found in the order form where it is to order the second issue. So that's something that just in their solicitation process, they shot themselves in the foot.
Interesting.
Now, one where there's an interesting kind of a statistic calculated for us, just because it dropped below the list for a couple issues, down at rank 289, we've got the final issue of Phoenix Without Ashes, number 4. The only other one to make the list was the first issue. The fourth issue here did 3,065. The first issue did 6,208. So it dropped by around half over the life of that series, which I find kind of surprising. I thought it was just great series. This is the one by Harlan Ellison. And I'd like to see them do more kind of continuing off on that. But that's one where we start to get down at this level with the 3,000 and below, 3,000-ish and below unit sales. Don't always make the cut every month. So sometimes we'll go a couple issues between seeing, you know, a title on the list. First issue of that Atomic Robo series we reviewed recently, 4,358 units. Not too bad for a Red 5 book.
But a great book. And it certainly deserves, in my mind, to sell way better than that level. You know, it's a great book.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and even books at this level, while most of them, I think, should be selling better, I mean, you go up a couple of units to 252, we've got Usagi Yojimbo, 133, and it sold 4,681 units, which is only about three dozen or so off from the previous issue. I mean, you've got a lot of books at this level that are doing really pretty consistent sales. I mean, A great example of that is at 274, we've got Sixth Gun from Oni Press, sixth issue, 3,589 units. That's off by one copy from the previous issue. That's close enough to be within the noise.
Yeah, I mean, that's another book I really like. You know, there's so many good books that I think a lot of people, you know, there's probably a mixture of reasons why people don't get them. But in some cases, I just don't think people see these books in the first place to even have a chance to try them out.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, you look at these numbers down at this end. These are lower numbers than there may be stores out there. I don't think there is a authoritative, definitive list outside of Diamond as to how many stores are out there, you know, both in terms of even inside of Diamond, they would have the number of accounts. They may not even know the physical number of storefronts. And then the question is, how many are there versus how many are these selling?
Yeah, you know, when you have a store like, for instance, you know, when I go into Comics, Toons, and Toys, you know, aside from whatever his subscribers get, you know, he usually has 5 to 10 issues of a book like The Sixth Gun on the rack. So that's, you know, that many other stores that don't even get a single copy.
Yeah. Fifth issue of Mighty Crusaders, just above 5,000 units. That's one that, of course, once that ends, we're not going to see those characters probably for a while. Deviate Gods and Monsters, number 8, 5,112 units. That was a really good series. I really enjoyed that. Wildcats 29, 5,151 units. This kind of, again, this is why they're winding down the Wildstorm, you know, universe. It just doesn't make sense for them to continue at that level. One that we saw a minor bump up on was the final issue of Astounding Wolfman at rank 220. It did 6,104 units. That's up a couple of dozen units, about 1.13% or 68 units from the previous issue. The high watermark on that title, which again I think goes towards explaining why it ended, was either the first issue or the second issue. I say either because since the first issue was a free comic book day one, I don't know how the circulation on that was. Diamond didn't track those sales because they were free to readers and stuff. But the second issue, which was the first that you had to pay for, 17,762 units. It dropped to around 13,000 with the second issue. It dropped below 10,000 with the sixth issue, and then just kept going from there for the most part. So this is, a clear indication of why Kirkman decided to end that title and that his time would be better spent on other books that were doing better. Certainly cannot fault him for that. Brightest Day continues to be doing pretty well. It's a little below 80,000 at this point. But again, huge counterpoint to how Generation Lost is doing, which is staying around the 33,000 point. So interesting how those are doing, and I'm curious how the DC Universe Online Legacy, or whatever they're calling the one off the MMO, is going to do when that comes out, and if that's going to overlap with either Generation Lost and or Brightest Day, and if we're going to have three biweekly series going concurrently for any length of time.
Yeah, and you know, another great book that's not burning up the charts, Elephant Men, down here. It's ranked 297, issue 28, sold 2,864 copies. The last issue that made the chart was issue 25, so that means 26 and 27 fell below the threshold, you know, on their given months. But you know, this is a really great book, but it's plagued with, you know, not coming out on a regular basis. This particular issue was 21 weeks late from when it was expected to ship.
Well, and 30 weeks since the previous issue shipped.
Yeah.
So even if you could deal with the 21 weeks late, it'd been over, you know, 6 months. It's hard to maintain story momentum with that. And it's, well, actually, that's 30 issues from issue 25. Issue 25 on that, I guess. But you're right. This is a phenomenally well-done book. It just doesn't have the market penetration. It doesn't have the story momentum, and you got to get the stuff out on time. In terms of weeks late, though, we've got a couple of books that are just... It amazes me how late some books can be. We only have a handful this time that are over 20 weeks late. Actually, surprisingly few. Elephant Man was one of them. Astounding Wolfman was one of them, being 25 weeks late.
Well, you got a couple Top Cow books. You got Angelus.
I was going to say, all the others are Top Cow books. Witchblade, Angelus, and Broken Trinity.
Yeah.
So, Top Cow is doing some really great stuff, but they need to get the trains running on time. Because in some cases, it was, you know, 10 weeks between issues on some of this. And like with that Astounding Wolfman, it was 25 weeks late, but 14 weeks since the previous issue, which means some of those issues were pretty late, too. Now, granted, that's also a bi-monthly book. And I really think that, and we've talked about this before, we'll no doubt talk about it again, getting the books out on time, getting them on a predictable schedule, something to where people know when to come back to the store to go get that next issue, that counts for a lot. You know, you can't sell a book if it's not there to be sold.
Well, I know some books that are really late, you know, and get rescheduled and, you know, the original order is canceled by Diamond and then it's kind of redone. You know, you give someone that, you've mentioned this before, you give someone that extra decision point, it's usually not going to go in your favor. You know, I have decided not to order things on resolicit before because it's been just so long since I've read the last one. And it's like, well, you know what? Don't really remember what was going on. I can probably do without it.
An example of that is Rank 280. Bomb Queen, Volume 6, Number 2, 3,451 units. It's a 35.8% drop from the previous issue. And part of that is while this, you know, shipped on time, it was also resolicited. The original ship date for this was over a year ago. So it was resolicited, so, you know, based on that updated solicitation, it shipped right when it should have, which is good, but based on when it was originally expected, it was 56 weeks late, and 60 weeks, I should say, from the previous issue. That really kills story momentum. And this is, again, we've talked about this a little briefly at the end of the Weekly Comic Spotlight this week. Jimmy Robinson's doing some great stuff there, and I'm sure there were things out of his control that made for those delays and whatnot. And certainly it's more understandable at the creator-owned and small press edge of things. But you can't expect story momentum with those kinds of delays. And again, I'm understandable, you know, and okay with this to a degree on the creator-owned and the indie side. When I see this sort of thing happening on the Marvel and DC mainstream stuff, it's like, come on, guys. You're big enough boys at that point with big enough budgets to stockpile a couple issues and get this stuff out on time. You know, there's no reason we should go, you know, 10 weeks between issues of Batman. That just doesn't make sense. But, you know, these things happen apparently, and so many things are contributing to why rank 23 we're below 50,000 units, and by rank 57 we're below 30,000 units. Things aren't shipping on time sometimes. Some books cost too much. There are too many redundant books, making it hard to decide what books people should get. There's turnover in creative teams, change in directions and stuff too often sometimes. Basically, too many things making the decision points harder and less, you know, likely to be made in favor of the title being picked up than against it. But this just adds up over time. Out of all of these, 24 items on the list were early, 164 were on time, 90 were late, 22 I'm not sure about. We had 50 number ones this month, 28 number twos, 122 items at the issue 3 to issue 12 range, and only 94 that were issue 13 or above. And a lot of those are going to be the perennials, either the Detective Comics, Action Comics, Fantastic Four, Amazing Spider-Man, or other sort of perennials like that, the Walt Disney comics and stories, things of that nature.
Yeah, those numbers have taken a jump when Marvel's, you know, renumbered a lot of books back up into their original numbering.
Yeah.
The same thing with DC on Wonder Woman. You know, you get more of those 500 and ups there.
Right. We talked about how 154 items on the list were $3.99. There were 104 at $2.99, 14 at $3.50, and 12 at $4.99. Those four price points account for 285 of the items on the list. We had one at a dollar, one at 220, 295, actually 284. I accidentally included one that was 395. There was one at 495. There were three at 599, three at 699, and six at 799. Those six would be the DC Comics Presents. And those are bottom of the list and sinking fast in many cases. 34% drop between the first and second issue of DC Comics Presents Brightest Day. That's a little harsh.
Well, and when the first issue is only selling about 5,000 copies, you know.
Yeah. Well, these are ones that I think this was a good experiment. I really question if this was the right content for that and if, you know, how well some of these were going to work. This is the format I might have used to take some of the harder to encapsulate and trade runs of, I don't know, Justice League or, you know, kind of the 70s, 80s stuff where you had more of the never-ending saga storytelling style where you don't have a clean intro, six issue later, clean exit kind of thing. That would have made sense to be doing in this sort of a format where you do kind of mini trades on a more frequent basis.
Well, the interesting thing about these books, and, you know, it's something for people to consider. I mean, they're probably not that easy to find at this point, given there's, like, not that many of them out there. But, you know, I was kind of mentioning I picked up a lot of these really cheap. The stories that they're reprinting are by relatively top-notch creators. I mean, I'm looking at Brightest Day number one, and we've got a little short by Neil Gaiman. There's a Ed Brubaker story in here, stuff by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti. And then they go way back, and they've got a Dead Man story by Arnold Drake and Carmine Infantino in there, too, you know, back his origin.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like it's the kind of thing where if you haven't seen those stories before, you know, it's, you know, it's pretty good. And you look at the Chase one that came out. It's not on this list, but, you know, that one J.H. Williams III worked on, and he's, you know, got a huge amount of popularity lately, what with Batwoman. Yeah.
And we did have the zero issue of Batwoman on the list this time around. It was at rank 27 and did 43,891 units, which is pretty good. And again, there's not that many things in the over 40,000 range these days. Yeah, I think DC's doing some interesting stuff, both in terms of rolling back the prices, the way they're repackaging some of their older stuff in this kind of half-trade format. Yeah, I'm, by and large, pleased with a lot of what they're doing in that area. So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think it does it for me.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to two decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list.
This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales through competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.